The Vital Statistics of Mental Health with psychologist David Abramson is brought to you by the High FM Helpline. Caring, compassionate, confidential. 0800 24 24 36.
David Abramson, good morning. Celebrities losing it a bit, do you think?
I also saw that, him getting his tattoo on his heart.
What?
You know, he got a tattoo on his heart.
For his dog? I can't remember.
Yes, on his heart. I saw it last night.
No rubbish, David.
Yes, I promise.
As a psychologist, like professional opinion, he needs help.
Yeah. Howard, I think people are very attached to their dogs, but personally, I think that's taking a little bit too far.
They left him at the pooch parlor. We're convinced of that. They're going to get a call later today. They're going to say, sorry, Mr. Bloom, you seem to have left Mighty here for 4 days now.
That's his name, Howard. He had Mighty. That's it, Mighty. I didn't quite see the end of the video because it was like kind of in fast forward. But
yeah,
definitely, people can go check it out. Definitely had Mighty tattooed onto his heart. I mean, imagine, you know, when he has a child.
You know, man, he's engaged to Katy Perry. They're expecting their first child sometime very, very soon. I mean, can you imagine what this poor child is going to say? What, he's going to cross out Mighty and put Chad on it?
Well, Mighty, you know, Mighty's going to be on the heart, and then the name of the child's going to be on the arm.
On his sleeve, exactly.
In itself, that's going to be there for years.
David, you're going to be busy. The other one, of course, that we were laughing about earlier in the week, very, very briefly, because we stopped laughing just because our listeners really abused us over it, but was the Kanye story. It turns out actually to be a tragically sad story, where at first we kind of think the guy's a funny lunatic and he's lost it, in inverted commas, until we realize actually this is very, very serious and he is suffering from bipolar disorder. Can you give us, just before we talk about anything else, like what does it mean when we hear that he suffers from bipolar?
I also saw that, and it is very, I mean, obviously when it happens at the time we all shake our heads and think, my God, this guy's running for president, and he now, I think if I read correctly, because I always kind of just read them very quickly, that he's naming his party the birthday party, and he really said some very controversial things. But that's exactly what you would expect, when someone is experiencing bipolar mood disorder. It's really exactly what it says, bipolar. So there's two extremes. So, you know, and that's the fight really with bipolar, and really, if you do have bipolar, really, you really do rely on medication to keep you stable, you know, to keep you in the middle. And what I mean by the middle is that on the one side would be tremendous downs, tremendous lows, you know, bouts of severe depression, and then swinging up to episodes of mania.
And that's
when you can have, you can have racing thoughts, you can have feelings of grandiosity. Often people go out there then and spend money when they don't have it, or they just spend money when they do have it, but really kind of just spend it recklessly. So really, I think what we saw was when he, what might have been the case is when he had that, that press conference, or that, you know, well, everything he says is kind of broadcast. But, you know, in that moment, he was clearly, it seems now, having a manic episode where he was saying things which really seems like weren't factually true, and were quite, you know, out of this world, quite ridiculous.
How long do these episodes normally last?
Well, it varies from person to person, you know, and I think it can last a couple of weeks. But generally it's a very, very, my heart goes out to people with bipolar, because it's very difficult.
And to the families, because you can see here what is so sad is you could see we are witnessing the damage that is being done every time he tweets something and says something, the damage that's being done to his wife and his children.
Well, that's the thing about, you know, the one of the difficulties with social media is that we don't get time really to mediate our thoughts. You know, we're able to just put things down and then press send. And, that's the difficulty when you are having a manic episode, is that You know, firstly, you don't know when it's going to happen. You know, it can, even when you're on medication, you can have a, you know, a manic episode. And if you've got a phone and you are such a public person, you know, your tweets and your WhatsApps are going out to millions of people. Mm. So it is, it's very, very difficult for the family because it's, you know, you can't take away someone's phone because in case they have a manic episode, you know, because they can be very stable for a long period of time. But when it does happen, it's very disturbing, especially for someone who's so public. Mm. So, mm. yeah.
What's interesting is that because it, this also plays out on social media, we also don't get time to digest and to kind of figure out what's happening. So we're also very quick to react and kind of dismiss him.
To laugh about it. Our listeners get cross that we're even talking about it because who cares?
Yeah.
And, but actually there's a subtext here that is such an important conversation to have because you know, the advantage of the world of celebrities and social media, obviously there are many disadvantages, but the flip side of that is that it highlights issues and it allows us to educate ourselves and other people around us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is initially, I don't blame people for initially saying, geez, this guy, you know, is he just a kind of a grandiose kind of person who just looking for attention and will say that, you know, the most outrageous things. So, so of course the initial reaction is going to be, as you say, how do you say it? It sounds like he's from the Free State, Howard, when you say
Free State Benoni. Oh, Kanye.
Can I actually tell you?
Kanye. You always say Kanye.
Yeah. I'm even so happy that Donald Trump did not say anything about this.
Yes.
Because I think that this thing would have been turned around and Donald Trump would be the bad guy.
Yes, would have been shown to be, you know, so, you abusing a person with a mental condition. Or interesting.
I'm very happy he didn't say anything.
Mm. Yeah, and I have to say that, you know, again, I'm saying this over radio, but I really don't have much time for the Kardashians at all.
And David, you know what? There's no such thing. If you need it, you make time. You know what? Things that are important, you make time for, David. Don't say you don't have time for the contestants.
I don't have time.
If it's important to you, you make the time. It's really that simple.
All right, I'll try. It'll be my goal for the week to make time for the Kardashians.
Good.
But I really had a lot of respect for Kim Kardashian for actually having the bravery, to come out and say, you know, listen, you know, please, you must put this in context. Understand that this is a good person.
Mm.
You know,
what did she say? It was actually interesting. She said he's an incredibly brilliant guy. He's got a good heart, but he's very complicated. And I think that's the right message.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Very brave message because I think, you know, you could just leave it and just put it down to, you know, eccentricity or whatever
celebrities,
it might be.
You know, this is what they do. Yeah.
And it's a very, it is a very private thing, you know, you don't normally people wouldn't just go and announce, you know, if they're taking medication for depression or anxiety, you know, you tell your closest, maybe your family, your closest friends. Mm. So it was a very, very brave thing that I would imagine they decided to do together.
Yeah. At that stage, now I don't think there's any decisions together.
Yeah.
David, do you think that the state of the world in terms of COVID, I mean, I know Americans are kind of half in lockdown, not in lockdown. Do you think that all of this contributes and exacerbates mental illness? Because one of the things we wanted to talk about a bit more today is loss. And there definitely does seem to me to be a lot of more stress around these, around people's mental health because of the loss of so many other ways in which we would normally balance it.
No, absolutely. I think for me, the more I listen to my clients, you know, you'd initially think that you are listening to anxiety, which you are. Of course, there's anxiety about what's happening. But, you know, when you kind of just listen for a little bit longer, you see that the theme of loss is just everywhere. And I think for me, there's no question that we all are feeling it to a greater or lesser degree. And I think what's also important to say is that I think we as human beings don't like to feel things that are uncomfortable, don't like to feel things like, of course, like loss and, of course, things like grief. So we tend to want to kind of put it aside and say and try and rationalize it and keep saying to ourselves, but let's look on the bright side. And I think we fall into that trap a lot these days, you know, with all the, I think we're the generation of self-help books and, you know, in the magazines, you just get these you know, a plethora of articles that just tell you how to be happy and to think about your, you know, we're the only generation that thinks about our feelings, about our feelings, you know. And I think for me, the thing is to just, you know, to understand that loss is not a competition. Loss is not something that's not a hierarchy of pain. You know, if you're experiencing a loss and it's a loss for you, to actually just recognize the loss, and we tend to, and to accept the loss to a degree, and to work through it.
Yeah, it's, how do you achieve that balance though? Because, you know, if you're going to ruminate, then it's also going to be, it's also obviously problematic.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But so I think for me, it's not about ruminating about it. It's about accepting, you know, again, it's easy to say about accepting the loss, but it's about recognizing the loss and saying, you know, I am experiencing a hard time. You know, we tend to, I think we're all guilty of it sometimes. Like, for example, with our children, if they say, you know, I'm missing my friends, we tend to say, but you know what, you know, just look at the bright side. You know, you can go on Zoom, or, you know, we live in a lovely house, or, you know, but you can go and take the dogs for a walk. We tend to find it very difficult.
Can't. Orlando Bloom.
Sorry. Oh, that was very, sorry.
No, I mean, he can't. David, that was insensitive to the Blooms. To
I
the Blooms.
Don't know why I brought that up.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
sorry.
Seriously, as a psychologist, surely one doesn't want to go back there. And just on that note, by the way, Linda says, morning, Mayhem team. It looks like, Katie is still kissing girls.
Yeah.
Spicy. All right.
Very
yes.
Spicy.
So, okay. So, David, your kid comes to you and says, I'm really missing my friends. I want to go to school.
Yes.
Your first response shouldn't be, think of the kids in China that are starving.
Look on the bright side, yeah, you know, look yeah. on the, you know, when we were growing up, it was always like eat all your food because even the stuff you really hated because people were dying in Ethiopia, you know, you know.
As Ethiopians, I'm going to always hold it. I'm convinced I'm overweight because of the Ethiopians.
No, me too.
Even
now I'm living with my brother and every time he leaves like a little bit of food, like,
let's say Ethiopia.
Like, oh my God, I cringe.
definitely true. Those Ethiopians, they are responsible
for the eating
so
disorders
much.
But I think absolutely you're spot on is to rather just, and it's hard for us as parents to sit, and even for ourselves to sit and say this is hard, and not to say, well, you know, because I'm missing you know, something that sounds frivolous, you know, I'm the child's missing soccer, or you're missing your poker game, or you're missing going out with friends, you know, to say this is hard, this is not easy. And I think what makes it even more difficult is, you know, that this whole idea of anticipatory grief, you know, like we don't actually know what else we're going to lose. You know, we're sitting and we're thinking, what else is, how long will this go on? What else are we going to actually be able to have a little bit of a holiday in December? Are we going to be able to actually go to end of year graduation? What else are we going to miss? So that's another thing, is that we don't know yet what we are going to lose, which also makes it difficult.
Yeah, so
to recognize that.
For me, it's about that to me is the loss more than anything, is the loss of confidence in the future and the loss of being able to plan and know what is going to happen. Whereas in the past, to me, if we've lost the last 8 months, okay, so we've lost it. David Abramson, he's a psychologist in private practice, and we're talking about loss during COVID-19 and lockdown in particular. So David, we don't have a lot of time. Well, we've only unfortunately got 3 minutes to talk about this, but your kid comes to you and says, I am really just missing my friends. I just want to go and play. What is our response? What is our response to our kids, and what is our response to ourselves?
You know, obviously we want to make the pain go away. We want to make it better. So we try and find ways to say to our child, you know, it's not such a problem. You know, don't worry about that. Well, and really what we're saying is don't feel about that, which is what we shouldn't be doing, you know, and then we try and make it better by rationalizing, oh, but there's something good going to happen today, or look on the bright side. And I think for me, that's a natural response, and we must be careful not to stand in judgment, because we don't want our child to feel anxious or feel the loss. But you say, yeah, it's very, and I know it sounds like a cliche, but this is so powerful to say, I know you're missing your friends. This is so hard. So to just to acknowledge it, because I think we are all going through grief, and it's very interesting. Just quickly, if you look, you know, at the stages of grief, you know, the famous stages that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross like spoke about. You know, it's actually, if you look at it, we're going through these stages of denial, where we say kind of the virus won't affect us, and then there's the anger where we're saying, why are you making us stay at home? Why are you taking away these activities? And the bargaining, you know, if I keep my mask on, if I social distance, everything will go away. And then the sadness, you know, I don't know when this will end. And hopefully then the acceptance to say, okay, this is happening. How am I going to make the best of it? You know, and then on top of that, of hopefully, I would add to that, hopefully finding meaning. So I'm noticing with my clients and with children that actually there is a people are, and remember that it's not linear. You know, this experience of grief.
But, yeah, I just don't understand. Carry on, David, and then I'll ask you.
Yeah. So I was just going to say that I think for me, if you look at what different people are experiencing, one could actually identify what everyone is feeling within those stages of grief. So I think for me, it just makes a lot of sense that yes, anxiety is there, but loss is definitely something we're all feeling, and we just need to acknowledge it. You know, we don't have to make it better. It is horrible. It is hard. Obviously, we don't want to wallow in it, as you said. We don't want to kind of stew in it. But what we don't do enough is acknowledge it, because we, and then of course move on, and then do things to make yourself better, be mindful, stay in the moment, try and see that there are some positive things, find the meaning in it, but at the same time, don't rush to make it all better too soon. Because if we miss that step, it just lingers. Mm.
And the danger is you thinking that just because you are at a certain stage in the grief process, that other people should be feeling the same. So
yeah, at the same time.
Yeah, so basically invalidating where they are and how they're feeling. That's the danger.
Yeah, and David, I'm assuming she wasn't Jewish, Kubler-Ross.
Sorry, Howard, I missed that.
Was she Jewish? I'm assuming not. Kubler-Ross, was she Jewish?
I'm not actually sure.
I'm sure not, because otherwise surely one of the stages would have been eating. And why isn't it, David?
I think it is. I think we should, she worked very closely with a guy called David Kessler, and that sounds very Jewish. I think we should blame him.
Bringing his Jewishness to the party. Really, I mean, not party, because I think that would be probably insensitive. Yeah, but if you know what I mean, like, why isn't there these stages of grief? Where is eating?
Well, I think
this is just a good question, Zanati.
Well, I'm not sure if that's the denial stage where if I eat all of this, I'm not going to put on weight, or it's the bargaining stage where why is there no more bagels? You know, that, and you kind of bargain with this. So that could be, if we look,
it's in there somewhere.
Might be there.
Right. Absolutely. I'm being flippant. It's a very serious conversation. Unsigned says, and our bar and bat mitzvah kiddies are affected badly. This is something that David said a number of weeks ago. It certainly opened my eyes to it, is that every year our kids have different experiences that they've anticipated and looked forward to. And there's a loss for that. With my daughter, it's to go on an Israel program, which would normally happen in grade 10. It's obviously not going to happen. And that's a huge thing. Yeah. You know, all of the kids before went on that. She's been anticipating it for years. Everybody gets excited because you're going into grade 10, and that's the year that you go on this program. And then it's just, it's taken away.
I know from my child's school, in the high school, they were preparing for a musical, you know, a play. They were spending till 9, 10 o'clock at night, and they were about, and for weeks on end, and Sundays all day, you know, and really putting themselves under pressure because they couldn't focus on their work. And literally it was a week or two before it was going to go on, and that was cancelled completely. And so can you imagine? Does it compare to someone who has, you know, is not eating? No, of course.
Or has lost their dog,
Or left their dog
at the peach parlor.
Yeah. Absolutely. Or God forbid someone who has lost a loved one. But we need to acknowledge that that's also a loss. And as I said in the beginning, it's not a competition. There's no need to compete about who's in more pain. And if you aren't in enough pain, then we can't recognize it.
Absolutely fantastic. It's 8:33. David Abramson, thank you as always. Very insightful and very helpful.
The Vital Statistics of Mental Health with psychologist David Abramson is brought to you by the Hi FM Helpline. Caring, compassionate, confidential. 0800 24 24 36.